You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We are 5 days into 2018, and with that, a happy new year to all the Redbirds fans and to you, Jennifer Langosch, our Cardinals reporter for MLB.com, who joins us today. Jen, as always, we thank you for the time, and during these chilly January days, we're going to think warm thoughts and look forward to the start of the 2018 season as the Cardinals have certainly done some work, but some work still yet to do before they take the field for one of 162. So, Jen, let's start here. At least on paper, when you look at this rotation right now, is it stronger now than it was last year? And the second part of the question is, who would you say is the pitcher that is the biggest X factor towards determining that question, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think to start with your first question, I'm not convinced that it is, actually. I mean, you look at what the Cardinals have lost, which is Lance Lynn, who obviously was an innings eater and a very good pitcher here for several years, still a free agent. And I think you have to consider, you know, Mike Leake is somebody lost as well, even though he was traded at the end of August. He is somebody who was in your rotation for 5 of 6 months last year. That's a lot of innings left to make up. I mean, you're talking about two pitchers who have historically been able to pitch 180 to 200 innings per season. Where do those 400 innings come from? I think that's the biggest question mark. Now, I think it's very fair to say that the Cardinals have a lot of potential in their future starting rotation. You think about the idea of getting Alex Reyes, for instance, back from Tommy John surgery. Luke Weaver looks so good down the stretch. He'll probably be in that opening day rotation. Jack Flaherty. But none of these pitchers have anything near a full season of major league experience. So what exactly can we expect in 2018? I think that's a big question mark. And that kind of takes me to the second part of your question, which is who is the X factor? I think it's Adam Wainwright. I mean, if Adam Wainwright can come back and be the pitcher, maybe not that he was during his prime, but be a, you know, at least a middle of rotation type arm, healthy, able to pitch 200 innings, 32 starts, the Cardinals might be in pretty good shape. If, however, he is more like the guy we've seen the last 2 years who has struggled to pitch deep into games, who has struggled with command and with injuries, then I think all of a sudden the Cardinals might come up short in their rotation. So no secret that the team is still looking at other options to add potentially to that rotation here over the next couple weeks. And I think we can see why, again, just having more options perhaps protects them with some of these young pitchers that are still starting to develop.
Yeah, I like the assessment by you that Wainwright is the biggest X factor because, for the past 2 years now, really, it's been Jekyll and Hyde. You look at him one day, you think, he's back. He's the Adam Wainwright of old. And then 5 days later, the train goes off the track. So if he can find that consistency that's eluded him, that would be a big, big boost to that Cardinals rotation, which, as you said, a lot of talent, but a lot of inexperience, too. They need Wainwright's veteran presence to kind of steer the ship here. Jen, on the offensive side of things, if the season were to start tomorrow in 15-degree weather and half a foot of snow, who would be the leadoff hitter right now?
Well, I sure wouldn't be there to see this game in the 15-degree weather. But the leadoff hitter, I think, will be Matt Carpenter. The Cardinals, of course, publicly haven't stated which direction they're going to go, both Carpenter and Fowler. You have two guys who have hit from that leadoff spot throughout their career. Both guys have said they're more comfortable hitting as a leadoff hitter than elsewhere in the lineup. But, of course, you only have one leadoff spot to give to two players. So this is a conversation that I think will trickle into spring training as the Cardinals kind of sit down with both guys and figure out their best options. But for whatever reason, Matt Carpenter, every time the Cardinals have taken him from that leadoff spot and put him elsewhere in the order, it just hasn't worked. The production hasn't been there. So my expectation is we'll see Carpenter hit first and then we'll see Dexter Fowler hit second, a place where he was for a good part of last year and actually performed quite well. And, for the Cardinals, then essentially you have two high on-base percentage guys right there at the top of your lineup ahead of a Tommy Pham, a Marcelo Zuna, Paul DeJong, guys that you expect to be able to drive them in. So my money is on Carpenter, but again, still a little bit unsettled as far as the Cardinals are concerned.
Jen, why do you think this sense of stubbornness by the Cardinals to take Carpenter out of a spot that he is clearly comfortable in and to put him somewhere where he's not nearly as productive? Why don't they just keep him there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think one of the things the Cardinals want to do before they publicly make a statement on this is specifically have this conversation with Dexter Fowler. You think back to a year ago, the Cardinals signed Dexter Fowler's $82 million five-year contract, and they signed him, number one, to be their center fielder, and number two, to be their leadoff hitter. Well, here we are in 2018, just a season of time under his belt in St. Louis. They've already asked him to move out of center field. Tommy Pham's going to slide in there. And now, you know, potentially are asking him permanently to move out of that leadoff spot. So I think it's out of respect for Dexter Fowler that they want to talk to him about this and make sure that he is on board. But without question, again, Matt Carpenter, for whatever reason, and to me it's inexplicable because I think he's just a pure good hitter, but he's not been able to hit as well in the two or three hole as he has from the leadoff spot. So to me, why fix something that's not broken? Mm-hmm. Leave it as it was the second half of last season. And again, you have two guys up there who can both get on base at a very impressive clip, and that can only benefit this team.
Yeah, and Dexter seems like a good team guy. If they want him to hit second and not play center field, his ego's going to be bruised. Anybody's would be, but he'll do it for the sake of the team. Put Carpenter where he's most comfortable, and boom, you're off and running. So let's just keep things simple, but we'll see. It's not our decision. We'll see what the Cardinals do for 2018 with the leadoff spot. Jen, there is a big, big gaping hole at the back end of that bullpen, specifically with the closer's role. Trevor Rosenthal, Sohn Waineau, both will not be in that role for various reasons. The team did sign Luke Gregerson. He has closed before. Didn't have a great 2017 playing for the Astros, but he does have experience there. Where do you see the Cardinals going with trying to fill that position?
I still think, Matt, that they're going to try to fill it from the outside. You know, here we have 6+ weeks left until spring training. You still have Greg Holland on the market. You still have interest in a guy like Alex Colome if the Cardinals want to swing a deal, and they still have the depth, especially on the outfield and pitching side, to be able to do that if they can match up with Tampa Bay. I'm just not sure. You know, you mentioned Luke Gregerson, the year he's coming off of. I'm just not sure that he is a guy that you can count on to begin and end your season as a closer. And it's no secret last year, especially early in the year, the Cardinals unraveled because of their inability to hold games, hold late game leads. So I think this is something that they still have to address. If they don't, then I guess you come into spring training probably with some sort of competition. I mean, you'd have Luke Gregerson in the mix, you know, maybe a Matt Bowman, a Sam Tuivasa, who has closed throughout his career in the minors. John Brebbia, you have Alex Reyes, you know, who's coming back from Tommy John surgery. And if the Cardinals are monitoring his innings early, they can put him in the bullpen. So you have some options there, but the Cardinals, and Mike Matheny in particular, has said that he really likes to have someone who has proven himself in that role. And for the Cardinals, they just don't have that guy right now. So to me, entering 2018, this is kind of the biggest offseason question still looming for this club. Again, they're fortunate there's still time remaining. There's still guys on the board who seem to have that fit for this team. So we'll see if something happens here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, they were kicking the tires on Colome before the new year. That's cooled off a little bit, but maybe they re-explore that and get a guy that was very under the radar but very, very good for Tampa Bay in 2017. Jen, back to the offense we go. One of my favorite transactions this entire hot stove season has been the Cardinals trading for Marcell Ozuna, a guy that in my eyes is very underrated, very underappreciated. Having said that, he was paired with Giancarlo Stanton for, you know, a number of years in Miami, obviously for his breakout season last year. That's no longer the case. He is now the man. He's expected to be the guy in the Cardinals lineup. Do you think there could be something of an adjustment period now that he is the focal point and not Giancarlo Stanton, as has been the case for a couple of years?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, I haven't gotten to know Ozuna personally, so in terms of like how he can handle that sort of pressure, this sort of stature of, as you mentioned, being the guy here in the lineup, I think remains to be seen. You know, I think too, you know, did the Cardinals trade for somebody who is just reaching his prime and figured it all out and is now going to take off? Or did they trade for somebody who, you know, overachieved slightly last year and then there's a little bit of a regression coming? These are questions that we'll have to, you know, answer a year from now. But at 27 years old, I mean, you have to like where he is in terms of his career. You look at the offensive numbers he put up last year, basically would have led this team in nearly every offensive category. He is that middle of the order impact bat that we've talked about the Cardinals lacking for the last 2 years, that sort of hitter that they've long had. And, you know, whether it was a Matt Holliday or an Albert Pujols before that. So I think he's going to make a big difference. He seemed, just in talking to him on the phone, very excited about coming to St. Louis, being a star here. And it's no secret that when you jump from a market like Miami to a market like St. Louis, where baseball is basically a 365-day-a-year sport, you know, hopefully he can enjoy that and enjoy playing in front of sellout crowds and in a city where baseball is so meaningful and so prominent. So it'll remain to be seen, but I do like the Cardinals deepening their lineup with this trade. And if you're going to fall short for Giancarlo Stanton, I think Marcelo Ozuna is a pretty good runner-up prize.
And the thing that people overlook about him, he's a Gold Glover. I think that kind of flies under the radar, too, with that. You don't see guys of his stature, guys of his offensive stature, who are so good in the field. He won his first career Gold Glove in left field last year. He's got that going for him, too. And we'll get to learn a lot more about Mr. Ozuna as 2018 progresses. But this could potentially be an ideal fit for the Cardinals. That is certainly what they're hoping. Jen, as we come down the stretch here, the Cardinals, of course, have not missed the playoffs in three straight years at any point this century. The last time that happened, 97, 98, 99. Cardinals fans are not used to having a Busch Stadium go dark in October. That's been the case for 2 years in a row. Do they avoid that third year here in 2018? Do they get back to where they should belong in the postseason?
Yeah, you know, as I look at what they've done this offseason, I do think they are a better team now than they were on October 1st, the last game of the 2017 season. So there has been some incremental, at least in my opinion, improvement there. Do I think yet that they've matched up with the Cubs? I'm not sure, and some of this is going to, you know, be dependent upon what the Cubs do, particularly in addressing their starting rotation, and what the Cardinals do in addressing their pitching as well, both as we talked about with the closer role and the starting pitching depth. That being said, I mean, the Cardinals were not that far out of the wild card race last year. If anything, they should certainly be in competition for that again, but their aspirations are much bigger than just a wild card spot. They want to reclaim this division. They want to prove that they haven't fallen behind the Chicago Cubs, and they want to compete for a world championship. So, yes, I mean, as you mentioned, 3 years without the playoffs here hasn't happened in almost 20 years, so it's very unfamiliar to Cardinal fans. And quite frankly, you know, Mike Matheny's job, I think, would be on the line as well if the Cardinals miss the playoffs for a third straight year. So it's why we've seen them go big and bold this offseason. It's why I think we're going to still see them make some moves between now and the start of camp next month. And I think by the end of this, yes, you're going to have a team that is going to be very much in the playoff hunt for 2018.
And maybe it's not the worst thing that this team has something of a chip on their shoulders. Something, you know, they come in there with something to prove, because, as you said, the speculation is that it's the Cubs and everybody else, and they don't want to be lumped in with everybody else. They're the St. Louis Cardinals, and they want to get back to where they feel they belong at the top of the NL Central. So maybe having a little fire underneath them is not the worst thing for 2018. It should be fun to see the whole thing play out. Jennifer Langos, great stuff as always. We thank you for the time, and we'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras St. Louis Cardinals. The first of many Pirates podcasts in 2018. A happy new year to all the Buccos fans and to you, Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter, as he joins us here on this fifth day of January, this very chilly Friday all along the East Coast. Adam, thank you so much for the time. And what we're doing today is taking a look, asking and answering the five biggest questions facing the Buccos for the 2018 season. And the first one, obviously, is the big one. It's something we've discussed at length in previous podcasts. But, you know, we've talked about, is this a team that's going to go all in? Is this a team that's, you know, maybe thinking about rebuilding? I think, you know, we can debate that for the next half hour. But I think we can all agree that something's got to be done. And the worst thing they can do is simply stand pat right now, correct?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it, is standing pat is probably not going to get you anywhere more than where they were over the last 2 years. And you could say, all right, maybe things will break in their direction that didn't go right the past 2 years. You know, maybe they'll get better health. But even then, are you good enough to beat the Cubs? Are you good enough to beat the Cardinals, who have added some pieces and don't seem like they're done? You know, are you good enough to beat out the wild card picture that's going to get increasingly crowded with, you know, that all those teams in the NL West building up? And I just don't know right now if they can count on things going right. You know, there's so many, they're dependent on so many what-ifs at this point with the roster that they have, that they either need to go out and they need to add, which seems less likely just given their payroll restrictions, their market size, the proximity of some of their big pieces to free agency, or they could sort of, you know, and I think in their preferred phrase is retool and take a step back in 2018, move some of their big pieces for prospects who are near ready or ready for the majors, and then go into next year with an eye on 2019 with sort of a younger core built up to eliminate some margin for error, or give themselves more margin for error, I should say, where it's not all about banking on everything to go right. It's saying, all right, this is a team that can withstand injuries, that can withstand subpar performances. You know, this is not a team that is Andrew McCutchen needs to be the MVP or we're not going to make the playoffs. So I think at this point it's more likely they go in that direction, but we are still waiting, and it's January 5th, so hopefully we'll find out sooner rather than later.
And, of course, Adam, you brought up the biggest name, you know, with regards to this direction, this blueprint, whatever that blueprint may be, Andrew McCutchen. It seems like, you know, we wake up every day and we say to ourselves, is this the day that Andrew McCutchen gets traded? We hear rumors and speculation almost on a daily basis, you know. When you look at the spectrum of, I guess, possibility with McCutchen getting traded, would you say it's possible, it's probable, it's a certainty? Well, how would you grade this right now?
I guess I would go with probable at this point on the scale of NFL injury list likelihood to play scale. Not questionable, probable. It just seems that that's the way the offseason is going. The only reason that I question that even is that who's interested? Who's out there that has an obvious hole for Andrew McCutchen? He's a good player, but in this offseason, it seems like, especially more than, you know, in years past, people are finding reasons to not acquire players. They're finding reasons to not trade for guys. And you could say, all right, maybe McCutchen isn't a center fielder anymore, even though he was better there last year than in 2016. You know, maybe he's not a number three hitter. Maybe, you know, the slumps that he's endured over the last 2 years are the start of a decline. But Andrew McCutchen could help a lot of teams as far as I can see, but the only teams that have been publicly linked to him so far are the Giants and the Mets, who don't have strong farm systems, who don't have the kind of prospects probably that would really entice the Pirates, certainly not the kind of prospects they're willing to give up at this point. So I'm going to say probable just based on the way this offseason is going, and I think it would be good for the Pirates to, you know, maybe sort of reload that farm system with, you know, by trading a guy like that, but it's not a guarantee at this point just because I don't think they're going to take a bad deal. You know, they need a good deal to move him. He's not the kind of guy that you're just trying to salary dump or anything like that. So I think it's more likely that he goes, but I think you kind of need to see more interesting and more fitting suitors at this point to really see a deal coming about.
And in that same vein as Andrew McCutchen, you can also apply all of that to Gerrit Cole. As I remember the day that you were actually here in New York City, that same day on the back page of the New York Post, a picture or an image, I should say, of Gerrit Cole in a Yankees stocking. And obviously they're on the Yankees wish list. The talks have kind of, I don't want to say died down, but it's, you don't hear it as heavily speculated now as you did a couple of weeks ago, but it's still something that's certainly, you know, on the table for both teams. So assuming that Cole does get traded, do you see it happening sooner rather than later, or do you see him maybe putting in a half season and the Pirates fielding trade offers before the deadline?
I don't think it's likely that he would be a deadline kind of guy. I think it's either this offseason or next offseason, because if they keep Cole, it's more likely that they're doing it with an eye on competing in 2018. So they're not going to kind of, Neil Huntington said the last day of the winter meetings, they're not going to kind of go with a toe in the water and, you know, test the waters and see if they're good enough and then re-decide it, you know, make another decision at the deadline. It seems like they're either going to commit to 2018 or they're going to commit to 2019 and beyond. So yeah, Cole is kind of the opposite of McCutchen in the sense that there is a very clear need for, you know, for him from a number of teams who have expressed interest. You know, we've heard the most about the Yankees, as you mentioned, and there's such an obvious fit there that it would surprise me if it doesn't happen just based on the probability and the likelihood and the great fit. The Twins are looking for a frontline starter. We've heard the Rangers are looking for starters. There's so many natural fits for Gerrit Cole where he wouldn't even have to be the ace. He would just have to be a frontline kind of 200-inning guy, which is exactly what he was last year. So it seems likely that Cole would go, but there's less pressure in the sense that he has that extra year of team control. So if the Pirates don't find that deal that they like, they could revisit it next offseason, still get a good value in return for him, and then kind of ride out this year and let him sort of mentor some of their younger starters for 2018.
And Adam, assuming that Gerrit Cole at some point does find a new major league home, does Jameson Taillon kind of inherit that mantle that Cole has had the last couple of years as you know, the true ace and the face of that rotation? And if so, behind Taillon, how do you feel you know, 1 through 5 with a rotation that would not, you know, include Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, it'd be hard to call Taillon an ace just based on the lack of experience. You know, he made his debut in 2016 and had a pretty good year as a rookie, and then obviously the testicular cancer interrupted 2017, and he struggled when he came back. So there's a lot of upside there. He's the kind of guy, certainly the kind of presence and personality and, you know, mentally tough guy that you would want atop your rotation, but he's going to have to prove that he can go 180, 200 innings. You know, he has that injury-prone reputation, which is bizarre because it's basically just Tommy John and fluke, you know, freak stuff after that. But he's the kind of guy that you could count on, former number two overall pick in the draft, got great stuff, three good major league pitches. So I think he's the kind of guy you could count on there. You would need Ivan Nova then to be that innings eater guy. You would need 180 to 200 innings out of him, at least in 2018, probably in 2019 when his contract expires as well. And then it's a lot of young guys. You know, it's Chad Kuhl, it's Trevor Williams, who we saw good stuff from in the second half of last season. It's Stephen Brault, Nick Kingham at some point, and then the ultimate question mark, which is Tyler Glasnow. If he gets his control together, he has that top of the rotation potential. He could be the ace, just based off that dominant strikeout kind of stuff, but we haven't seen it at the major league level yet, so it's hard to really know what you're counting on with Tyler Glasnow going into 2018. Is he going to open the season in the Pirates bullpen, in the AAA rotation, in the Pirates rotation? We don't know, so I think that's kind of going to be the biggest question mark, really, until he figures it out or he establishes himself as a reliever, you know, is what exactly is he going to be?
Yeah, and Adam, to wrap up here, you take a look at the outfield, and for the past couple years, you know, you look at the names on paper and you say, you know, this should be one of the elite outfields in baseball, but of course things have gotten in the way with Gregory Polanco, some inconsistency. Of course, Starling Marte with the PED suspension last year, which cost him about a third of the season. We don't know what's going to happen with Andrew McCutchen. Austin Meadows is somewhere going to be in that mix. Well, so when you look at 2018, as you know, looking at that group as a whole, is 2018 the year that these guys really finally put it all together?
Yeah, I think it's funny because, you know, I actually went back the other day and I read a story, a national story from 3 years ago, and the question was, do the Pirates have the best young outfield in baseball? And then 2015 actually wound up being their best year together, which we may not have appreciated at the time, but McCutchen finished in the top five in the MVP voting. Starling Marte actually led the team in wins above replacement, and Gregory Polanco stayed on the field. He wasn't quite at his offensive ceiling, obviously, but he was a good defender. He stole 27 bases. And they were there together all the time. You know, they played every day. Last season, they started in the same outfield 26 times, 26 times out of 162 games. So when you look at where the underachievement has come about, you can say, all right, you know, the power hasn't been there offensively. You know, the pitching staff has been young and unproven, and 2016 was just unsuccessful. But this team was built around its outfield, around those three guys. So, you know, you could say, all right, they might move off Andrew McCutchen this offseason. Then it's going to be about Austin Meadows, and there are questions with him as well. You know, he's been severely injury prone. You know, I think he's only played more than 90 games in a minor league season once. So there are still going to be really serious questions about this outfield, which needs to be sort of the, you know, the engine that drives the offense, whether it's McCutchen, Meadows, Marte and Polanco, how they fit in there. So much of their success, not just in 2018, but probably in 19 and 20 as well, is based off of, you know, the question of what is Marte, what is Polanco. We've seen Marte play at a high level before. We've seen Polanco have stretches of high level performance, but if they can put it together, whoever is in that outfield alongside Marte and Polanco, if they can put it together for a full, healthy, complete season, I think it's a lot more likely you see a winning Pirates team than not, because we've seen it in 2015. That was them at their best. They had a winning season. That team won 98 games, largely based off of their pitching and their outfield, and I think that's kind of going to be the formula for the Pirates moving forward.
Yeah, the potential and the talent are no question there. It's time to turn those attributes, though, into a full season of productivity. We'll see if that happens in 2018. Adam Berry, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time, and we'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates. It is the first Brewers podcast of 2018, and with that, we are joined, as always, by our good friend, Adam McKelvey, our Brewers reporter for MLB.com. Adam, thank you so much for the time, and a happy new year to you and yours. And, of course, this is not breaking news, but the hot stove, not exactly hot or even lukewarm. It is moving at a rather glacial, deliberate pace. I would actually go for deliberate right now because it beats nothing, which is pretty much what's going on right now. So what we're going to do to fill the time today is kind of go over the five biggest questions per you facing the Brewers here in 2018. But before we do that, I want to get your take on something because, of course, the major news story right now is the fact that, yeah, it's cold outside. But I want to know from a Wisconsinite, is this really that cold? Or, I mean, to me, that there's cold and then there's Wisconsin cold. I mean, to me, it would seem like if you guys had the weather we're having here where it's in the, you know, the teens or low 20s and people, you know, moan and complain about it, you guys would just laugh it off and say, this is shorts weather. So, I mean, what's your take on what is actually cold right now?
Well, I skied on New Year's Eve day in negative 10 in the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, wow.
That's cold. But, you know, if you're ready for it, it's fine. So it's about layers. It's not about big, giant sweatshirts and sweaters.
Right.
It's about many layers. It's about air movement in your boots.
Yep.
So not having too tight. And, you know, you're fine. So we were short bursts. We were fine. We survived. Had a big bonfire at midnight on New Year's Eve, and yeah, I think it dipped under negative 10.
Wow!
Down by the lake, up in northern Wisconsin. Jeez. So it was cold. I'll give you that. That's cold, and it felt very good to get back inside by the fire.
Yeah, I can't blame you there. I mean, I walk around, you know, New York City here, and this is not to put down people who are, you know, wearing the parkas and the mittens and the scarves, but I'm thinking, like, come on, people. It's cold, and I get it, but, I mean, to me, again, there's cold and there's Wisconsin cold, and I think, like, you guys have the more legitimate cold going on to the point where I see people around here, and I'm thinking, like, you wouldn't survive in the Midwest. You just wouldn't, so.
Well, then there's North Dakota cold.
Oh,
that's
man.
Another level. Yeah, so it's always worse. There's always something worse.
Always
there's Siberia cold, which is
true.
Where they'll send us if we don't start talking about baseball.
That's as good a segue as I could have come up with, so we'll use that as our jumping off point. So let's try to heat things up, I guess. That's another bad segue by me. So again, the five questions that the Brewers face here in 2018. I think the biggest one is, you know, we've seen some signings and some, you know, reunions. Giovanni Gallardo stands out, of course, among those. But when you look at the roster right now, is there a lot of work left to do a little bit, or are they going to roll with what they got right now?
Well, you know, Matt, writing this story before the new year reminded me kind of one of our first podcasts of the off season or our last podcast of the regular season, in that it gets back to the really interesting thing about this particular, the way the Brewers roster is constructed right now. And David Stearns has said this. They like their team as it is. This is a team that surprised last year, got to within a game of going to the postseason, of playing in that wild card game. So there's a lot to like about the players they have in-house. And he, you know, made the point sort of going in that if they made no changes, he'd be okay with it. Now, making no changes is not realistic, so they have done some things. And the question all along has been, how big are they going to go in their additions or their changes? So far, not very big, but as you correctly point out, that's true all around baseball. So to me, there is still a lot left unanswered about how exactly David Stearns views what he's got, where he thinks this club can go in 2018, and just how much he wants to add before they get to opening day. And this is just, you know, each year it's getting later and later. My theory is a lot of this has to do with the Ivy League GM, who is making decisions based on logic instead of emotion, or at least that scale is leaning further away from emotion than perhaps in the past. They're willing, perfectly happy to wait until very late, close to spring training or even into spring training to make their changes. And I don't know. I think there are a lot of clubs where you're going to be able to say this year, you don't know what the club's going to look like on opening day until opening day. I think there are GMs all over this game right now that are willing to take this right up to the end to make their final additions, to get the deals that they want to get. And they're not feeling any pressure to move just because the rest of us are saying, oh, my God, isn't everything so slow and isn't this all terrible? I think they're going to be patient, and I think David Stearns still has some significant moves up his sleeve.
It's almost as if, you know, all 30 GMs got together and said, hey, here's our blueprint. Here's our game plan. Don't screw it up for the rest of us. You know, let's wait this out. Let's wait for the prices to come down. Let's let these guys and the agents and the Scott Borises of the world sweat a little bit. And then come mid, late January, even into early February, all right, let's get something done. But like you said, it could be weeks before we see more significant movement on the free agent market or the trade market, because that's just the way that things are trending right now, and it's just the way it is. And it's not like in years past where you saw a frenzy of activity at the winter meetings and, you know, before the calendar flipped to the new year. This is what it is now, so it's the ultimate game of chicken, and we'll see who blinks first as the weeks wear on here as we kick off a 2018. So, Adam, you mentioned, David Stern's plan and in terms of how he looks at the roster right now. With specificity to the starting rotation, we've already seen, like I said, the reunion with Yovani Gallardo. We've seen Jolys Chacín coming aboard. Now, a lot of that has been necessitated by some health issues within the rotation. How much more could we or should we expect regarding tweaks to that rotation?
Yeah, I still think there is room to add if these prices get to where it looks like a good deal. It looks like a smart move. And, you know, sure enough, coming out of New Year's, our friend John Morosi reports that the Brewers have recently been in touch with Alex Cobb's representative. Hmm. That's a name that makes a lot of sense. You know, we kind of went through the logic on Jake Arrieta and that theoretically the Brewers have the money to go big like that. It seems less and less likely that that's the direction they're going to go. But a guy like Alex Cobb, a little bit shorter term, you know, a little bit less on an average annual value, although still really significant when you start hearing about, you know, numbers floated like 4 years, $80 million. That's still a very big number. But it is something that is certainly within the Brewers, the realm of possibility budget-wise, because they have so many pre-arbitration and guys who are early in their arbitration years and just aren't costing the big, big dollars just yet. So I would put it, you know, this is just sort of guesswork at this point still, but looking at the number of players still out there, the number of dollars still sort of at David Stern's disposal, I still think there's a significant rotation add to be made here. Remember, this club was a very good pitching team, surprisingly good pitching team last year, 10th in the league in starters ERA. It kind of is what fueled them. After years of being a club fueled by offense, this is a pitching team. Then they lost Jimmy Nelson late in the year. They're going to go into next season without him available at the top of the rotation. And I think with the other good things happening on their roster from an offensive standpoint, you can make a pretty strong argument that it makes sense for David Stearns to spend a little bit on some pitchers on short-ish term deals, some high-quality pitchers, to sort of bridge that Jimmy Nelson gap. And then when Nelson comes back, you've got yourself a nice solid rotation, and maybe you can surprise again this year. Maybe you can make a run again in 2018.
Yeah, of course, the old saying, you can never have enough arms, enough depth, whether in the rotation or the bullpen or ideally both, and hopefully that is the plan for the Brewers going ahead here in 2018. And Adam, it would not be a true Brewers podcast if we did not discuss one of our favorites, Josh Hader. This role used to be reserved for Willie Peralta. He's, of course, now an ex-Brewer. But we talk about Hader every week, and with good reason. He could start. He can relieve. He's young. Yeah. He's got talent. The question simply is, where does he fit?
Well, and look, the year begins. We still don't know. And this is exactly why David Stearns and Craig Counsell didn't want to declare on this before they had to declare, because they wanted that flexibility. If smart opportunities come up, they're going to add. They felt like Jolys Chacín, Yovani Gallardo were smart opportunities to add for Chacín, a guy who definitely looks like he will be in the rotation. Gallardo, a guy who will have to compete for a spot, maybe a spot in the bullpen. There are more guys out there. You know, there's more opportunities to add. If they add more starting pitchers, I think it looks more and more likely Hader goes to the pen. That still looks like, you know, it's like 80-20, I think, that Josh Hader stays in the bullpen based on what they've said about the success he had there last year. You can pick and choose your spots to where you really maximize his power left arm in at spots in the lineup, spots in the game. there are a lot of strong arguments for keeping him where he's at. But look, they get to the end of this offseason. Jimmy Nelson's out. Maybe someone else gets hurt in spring training. And there's like some big glaring need in that rotation. They have set themselves up to have the flexibility to put Josh Hader back into that role, maybe a little bit earlier than expected. So they it's all about having flexibility and managing the team and putting players in different spots. That's the mantra Craig Counsell has instilled in this group. And it is sort of, you know, Josh Hader is example A this offseason of a guy, you know, don't declare until you have to declare. And they still have not exactly said what he's going to be doing.
And like you said, guys that have his pedigree and his flexibility, first and foremost, are so valuable. They can wear many different hats during the course of a season. And Hader might have to be that guy, you know, given with what happens with certain health issues, with guys that maybe underperform. You've got him as a security blanket, and that's always a good thing to have for any team and for any manager, and a luxury certainly for Craig Counsell heading into 2018. Adam, it's always very hard to project or predict when it comes to health, especially for guys that are, you know, into their early or mid-30s, such as Ryan Braun now is. And, of course, we've talked about in detail and at length about his health issues the past couple years, but if you have to guess right now, given the nature of his health woes, given his age, you put all that in the blender and spit it out, what kind of chances do you give Braun on having a fully healthy 2018?
Yeah, I put this in there because I think this remains just the biggest unknown for this team. I've said this to you before, Matt, I think. I've never watched a player where his success is as closely tied to health as it is for Ryan Braun.
Right.
When he is healthy, he is one of the best right-handed hitters in baseball, almost immune to slumps when he's good. He doesn't dive like a lot of hitters are prone to do, you know, the roller coaster of hitting. He is as steady a player when healthy as I've seen. Now, he obviously hasn't been healthy for he's had some unhealthy seasons mixed in the last couple of years. Last year was one of them where I don't have the number of at-bats in front of me, but it was in the 300s. It was low. They need to get him back over 400, close to 500 at-bats. And if they can do that, that is a huge boost for an offense that now has, you know, Travis Shaw, Eric Thames, Lefty Power, both guys coming off 31 homer seasons, has Domingo Santana really cemented himself, also a 30-homer season for him. If you add a healthy Ryan Braun into that, that is a extremely potent foursome in the middle of your lineup. So this, I think it's kind of an old, tired question to a lot of people. There's some weariness of the sort of daily, how is Ryan Braun's wrist? His calf was an issue last year. You know, just where's his body at today? It's kind of tiring for Craig Counsell. It's tiring for Ryan Braun to have to deal with that. But I put it in the story because it is still a vital, vital component to the success or failure of this team in 2018. At 33 years old, 34, he is still extremely capable of being the best hitter on the team. And it's all going to come down to health. And it's up to sort of Craig Counsell and Ryan Braun and the medical staff to try to navigate, you know, try to get in as many healthy games as possible. That's been the aim for the last couple of seasons. It wasn't as successful last year as the one before. They're going to try to get back, you know, back towards that 120, 25, 30 game, 100, you know, 400 at-bats, 500 at-bats. Those are some of the targets for Ryan Braun. And if they get there, I like this team's chances to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people are in agreement that he is the single biggest determining factor as to whether this offense is good or potentially great. And if we get a healthy Ryan Braun in 2018, you're looking at an offense that I think in many people's eyes could be among the elite offenses, not just in the National League, but across all of baseball. So a lot hinges on Ryan Braun and his health up for 2018. That is an understatement for sure. Adam, to wrap up here, of course, whenever you get a team that exceeds expectations and guys kind of come out of nowhere to have great years, the fear is that, you know, in the ensuing season, there is going to be some regression. And, of course, there are some guys that are candidates for that. We saw Corey Knable have a lights-out year, closing at the back end of the bullpen. Eric Thames was an absolute beast in April. He did tail off some, but overall still had a very productive year, his first year back in the States after tearing it up in Korea for some time. So what are the chances that Brewers fans have to exercise a little bit of caution here and figure that some guys are going to take a step back in 2018?
Yeah, that is a possibility. And we love Travis Shaw for many reasons. He fills the notebooks for us scribes. And he said, he's a very honest guy. He said that is on the radar for next season. It's something that they need to be wary of. Shaw, Thames, Santana, all 30 homers for the first time in their careers. Orlando Arcia, a nice, healthy, full season. The catching tandem was better than anyone expected. The rotation, as we just said, was better than expected. The bullpen survived. Naftali Feliz totally flaming out early in the year because Corey Knable was so good in his first full season as a closer. There are a lot of guys coming off the quote-unquote best years of their careers, and that opens the door to a little bit of regression. And this kind of gets back to, how much is David Stearns willing to add to this group versus just give these guys another year to develop and see what the regression is and see where there's further growth. Because players who surprise you once, there's nothing to say that they can't go and surprise you again. Really good players do that. So that sort of brings us back to the beginning and really the beginning of the offseason to this big, really difficult overarching question of where exactly is this team at in this rebuild? Is it still rebuilding and needs one more year of development before you really go for it? Or is it emerging? Is it out? Getting to within one game of the wild card, does that signify that, look, the rebuild is over? You stocked that farm system. You've got good players in the big leagues. You're ready to win. Or is it somewhere along that spectrum? I'm not smart enough to know the answer. They've got really smart people at Miller Park who probably could answer that a lot better and know a lot more what remains in these waning weeks of the off season. But those are kind of the big issues facing David Stearns and the Brewers going forward. And look, maybe you take a step back in 2018 in order to take a much bigger step forward after that. That is certainly one of the possibilities for this club going into next year. And it's why I think it's going to be an interesting club to follow.
Yeah, no question there. It's such a double-edged sword when you have the season that the Brewers had in 2017, because like you just said, it presents a whole new set of questions. You think, well, are we further along than we thought? Should we go for it now? Do we need to pump the brakes a little bit? There's a lot, like I said, a new batch of questions that come with sort of overachieving as the Brewers did in 2017. And again, as you said, that's why the Crew is going to be one of the more fascinating teams to watch in 2018. And that's a good place to wrap this one up on the third day of 2018. Adam McKelvey, great stuff as always. We'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers. It is the first of many Reds podcasts in 2018. Happy New Year to all the Reds fans and to you, Mr. Mark Sheldon, our Reds reporter for MLB.com. And Mark, as always, we thank you for the time. And what we're doing today is simply looking ahead. Spring training is not that far away, as hard as that is to believe. And before we know it, the 2018 season as well is going to be underway in earnest. What we're doing today is asking the five biggest questions that this Reds team is going to face heading into the 2018 season. So, Mark, let's start right here with what is always a big question regarding this Reds team. That is the rotation. When you assess the rotation right now, who would you say is a lock for a spot in that rotation? Who are some guys that have inside tracks, and who are some guys that are going to be complete wild cards, maybe competing for the 4 and 5 spots in that rotation?
Yeah, Matt, talking to Brian Price during the winter meetings, he seemed to have four guys in his mind that were locks going into spring training, and that would have been Homer Bailey, Anthony DeSclafani, Brandon Finnegan, and Luis Castillo. And then you kind of had and this is me talking, not what Brian was saying, but you probably have the first tier of of guys that are going to be in that line for the fifth spot, and you're talking about Sal Romano, Tyler Malley, and Robert Stevenson. And then the wild cards, in my mind, are guys like Amir Garrett, Cody Reed, and Jackson Stevens. I think those might be the guys. Brian did indicate that two guys that have been starters traditionally are going to be used in the bullpen, so he didn't say which two. So that'll be an interesting note. And then, of course, another X factor is Michael Lorenzen, who's been the setup guy for the last couple of years. He's also going to get an opportunity to compete for the rotation. And I think Michael will have to leapfrog a few of these guys in order to get in there. But he's a very good candidate because he can definitely bring the stuff. He's got multiple pitches and he's got a lot of velocity. If he can dial back some of the other things that led to him not succeeding as a starter, he can be a factor as well.
And, Mark, of the guys you mentioned that are going to be competing for those spots in the mid to the back of that rotation, in terms of a guy that simply intrigues you, who is one guy that you would pick out, one guy that you would earmark as somebody that kind of you say to yourself, I really, really want to see how this guy's stuff could translate as a full-time starter? Is there one guy that kind of stands out for you?
I'd have to say Malley, just because I didn't see him that much, and he was so successful very quickly going up the chain. Luis Castillo obviously did a lot of things going from Double A to the big leagues, and we got to see him, and he's definitely got ace in the making stuff. But Malley is someone that they could only see for a little bit. I think he got four starts and then his innings limit hit and they had to shut him down. But he is a guy that could very well translate into being a major league starter pretty quickly and successfully. I'm looking to see a bigger body of work, and I'm sure the Reds are as well, but they were very impressed with his numbers in the minors, especially last year, and they think he's a guy that they're going to like for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting spring training for Brian Price and the pitching staff as they look to sort things out and roll with their five guys for opening day and beyond. That's, of course, always subject to change as things seem to go. Mark, question two is a two-part question. Do you believe this is Nick Senzel's time, and if it is, where do you think he's going to play?
That's a great question. I think Nick Senzel thinks it's Nick Senzel's time, and he's definitely coming to camp. When I talked to him, he said he's definitely coming to camp looking to earn a spot out of spring training. He's not content with starting the year in AAA, which is probably what's going to happen. But I would imagine that when his bat gets to Louisville in late March, he's not going to take very long to show that he belongs in the major leagues. And then the question, of course, is where does he play? Third base is his natural position. That's where Eugenio Suarez is, and they're right now loath to move Suarez. Then you have he's going to be giving some experience in left and right field. They're going to have his glove up, learn. He's already been practicing in Tennessee, and he's got experience in either college or high school at shortstop and second base. I think if he was to land in one particular spot, I would say it would be either shortstop or second base. Those are the two spots that kind of have maybe some vulnerability in some sense. Scooter Gennett, of course, is coming off a breakout year. The four home run game obviously comes to mind, the four grand slams. He hit over 25 home runs, but you have to wonder if the trend will go back downward a little bit. It'd be very hard for him to duplicate that season again, but if he does, he's going to probably be safe. And then you have Jose Peraza at shortstop, who struggled in the first half last year, lost his job at second base to Jeanette, then came back and filled in for Zach Cozart sometimes, and he definitely showed some improvement. But I would say that Senzel could push one of those guys, or they can make a trade in the outfield, and maybe Senzel could find a spot there. It definitely falls into the system of, if you can hit, they'll find a place for you to play.
Yeah, the cream always rises, as the saying goes. And, Mark, that's a perfect segue to the next question, which you just touched on. Regarding the outfield, the saying goes kind of that you can never have too much talent or too many players, because there's such an emphasis on depth and on flexibility at every position on the baseball field right now. Having said that, though, do you still feel that there's at least one too many outfielders in the mix?
Yeah. Right now, going into camp and after talking to Dick Williams and Brian Price, they seem like they're prepared to go with a four outfielder rotation between Jesse Winker, Adam Duvall, Scott Schebler, and Billy Hamilton, where that all four guys can get 120 plus games a year and maybe, 400 to 500 at bats somehow, or more or less is whoever the guy isn't playing that day becomes their sort of the ace in the hole off the bench. They've had a you know, some bench issues over the year, and, you know, and they all bring different things. If it's Hamilton, obviously he would come in and bring in late inning defense and speed if he wants to come in and disrupt something in the late innings. Shevler and Duvall are home run hitters, and they can obviously be a late inning game changer. And then Winker is just the steady get on base, hit line drives kind of guy. But ultimately they want to find a place for Jesse Winker to play full time. And Adam Duvall was shopped around a little bit, and I haven't heard anything lately. There was a lot of talk about Billy Hamilton to the Giants, but you got to wonder now that the Giants have traded a lot of their assets to get Evan Longoria, they may not have enough to get Billy Hamilton. But somebody eventually probably have to be moved. And then you throw Nick Senzel in there. If he's good enough to be in the outfield, then you have a fifth guy to deal with. And then there's Philip Irvin, who's probably destined for AAA, but would be the first option if anything was to happen to anybody. So there's definitely a crowd. It's not the worst problem to have, but I think if they were able to find a deal for Duvall or Shevler or Hamilton in order to give Jesse Winker everyday playing time, I think they would do it. Hamilton, moving him is a little harder because they don't have the easiest market for him. I think they've asked for a lot. They covet him because of his defense and his speed. Obviously, his offense has a long way to go to being satisfactory, but they also don't have a center fielder ready to go to take over for him on an everyday basis.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue again to the next question regarding Billy Hamilton specifically. You know, there are guys that, you know, obviously Billy Hamilton is, you know, in a class by himself when it comes to speed, when it comes to defense. And because of those attributes, you kind of say to yourself, if this guy could just hit, you know, 250, he could be an all-star every year. Whereas there's other guys that may need to hit over 300 because they don't have the speed or the defense that Billy Hamilton possesses. So I guess when you look at that end of the equation for Billy Hamilton, if you have to put a number to it, you know, a number for average, a number for on-base percentage and so forth, you know, what might those numbers be to where he could reach that next level?
In my opinion, I'm not thinking about the average quite as much, but I have to think the on-base percentage has to be minimum 320. And I just think if he's on base, that he was at 299 last season, and on base, and he batted 247. If he can just get on a little bit more, he's going to create that many more runs. He's going to create that many much more scoring opportunities for whether it's Suarez or Votto or Shevler or Jeanette that are hitting behind him, Duvall. And I just think the Reds' offense can go to the next level. It's just they've always said to him, and it's something he's embraced, especially early when he first came up. You know, the team goes as Billy goes, and I think that's been perfectly evident when 2014 when he's playing full time for the first time, they didn't have any trouble scoring with Hamilton. They did have some struggles in other areas, and they eventually fell off and didn't win. But he can create opportunities for them when he's on the bases. He makes pitchers' life's nightmares and things like that. But when he's not getting on base, the Reds become a lot easier to get out, and that's he cannot have the first out all the time, you know, in from your leadoff spot. You just got to find a way to get on base.
And Mark, what is the biggest X factor with Billy Hamilton in terms of you know, increasing that end of his game? You know, does he have to be more patient at the plate? Does he have to, you know, simply make harder contact on the pitches he does get in the zone? Is it a combination of those things? What do you think?
It's all a combination. His bugaboo in past years has been the whole switch hitting thing. He nearly gave it up. But the funny thing is this past year, he was better left-handed, his not natural side, than he was right-handed. Hmm. And what he really wants to do, and what he's working on, he's going to Texas to work with the Reds' assistant hitting coach, Tony Yarmio, and he's also going to work out with his friend Delino DeShields Jr., is that he wants to be able to be a serviceable full-time switch hitter that has both sides of the plate going at the same time. I think he kind of said it to me recently, you know, when one's going, the other's, you know, dipping, and he needs to find a way to put it all together so that he can be a consistent on-base threat from both sides of the plate at all times. I think if he can do that, the Reds could definitely be a problem for a lot of teams going forward.
Yeah, sky is the limit for Billy Hamilton if he can really increase that part of his game, because we know the defense is going to be there. We know the stolen bases are always going to be there, and maybe this is the year that Billy Hamilton does indeed reach that next level. Mark, to wrap things up here, this is something we've discussed at length. This is something that's been a lingering issue until the trade went through, but now that Zach Cozart is elsewhere and he's enjoying the warm weather in Anaheim, which for the rest of us are not, is this the year that Jose Peraza steps up and really takes his place and really locks down that role as a full-time starter?
I think it needs to be, obviously, for, like I mentioned before, Senzel is nipping at the heels of anybody that can falter so he can get a job. But Jose Peraza is not going to turn 24 until April 30th. And so even though he's been here for a couple of years, it's just easy to forget how young he is, and there's still room to grow. He definitely struggled in the first half. He was the everyday second baseman that replaced Brandon Phillips. It didn't go well. He was, he's one of those guys who's not very selective. He's one of the things that they kind of liked about him is that he was an aggressive hitter, but I think it kind of caught up to him that he wasn't getting good contact. He wasn't hitting good pitches, and he definitely didn't walk very much. And then if you look at his if you looked at his second half numbers, when he kind of, after he got benched, he came back and after, like, over his last 48 games, he batted .293 and his on-base percentage was .361. And he definitely, was focused on being more selective, getting on base more, making better contact. And I think it showed. And if he can bring that last 48 games into 2018, he will succeed at replacing Cozart, at least offensively. He's not going to probably hit the kind of home runs that Cozart did. Cozart obviously had a breakout year with home runs. And then defense, I think initially he's not going to be Zach Cozart. A guy was a gold glove, caliber kind of player, but I think he can develop into it. He's got a good work ethic. Eugenio Suarez was not much of a third baseman when he first got to that position, and he worked his way into being darn near a gold glove caliber guy. And I think that could happen to Jose Peraza with repetition.
And, of course, as you said again, Nick Senzel is going to be nipping on a lot of guys' heels if they begin to falter offensively, defensively, or both. And that is a big X factor and wild card for the Reds here in 2018. It'll be interesting to see how the whole thing shakes out. Great place to wrap this one up on this Friday, Mr. Mark Sheldon. We thank you for the time, and we'll do it again next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Cincinnati Reds. It is Friday, the fifth day of 2018, a brand new year, and a happy new year to all the Cubs fans and to Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter, who joins us here today. Kerry, we thank you as always for the time, and in these very chilly winter days, both in Chicago and New York, we're looking ahead to much warmer ones for the 2018 campaign, and with that, the five biggest questions that the Cubs face heading into a brand new season. So, Kerry, I think one of the biggest questions, obviously, regarding the rotation, the Cubs obviously signing Tyler Chatwood to that multi-year deal. They've got that nucleus of Lester, Quintana, Kyle Hendricks. So that begs the question, the fifth starter, an internal reinforcement, maybe another free agent pickup. How do you see the Cubs addressing this?
Well, I don't think that they're finished with their off-season additions before spring training opens. I'm not sure. They did meet with Yu Darvish down in Texas. They have been in contact with Jake Arrieta's people. They've also been looking at free agent Alex Cobb since the season ended. So it could be one of those three. There were reports that they were looking at a possible trade situation. But I know if in Theo's perfect world, he would rather not part with any of the young talent that they have on the roster. So As we stand right now today, if the season started, I'm not sure who they would go with. They've got an Eddie Butler in the system, Alec Mills. The problem with the Cubs is that none of their young kids, their young pitchers, are ready yet. The kids that they're pretty high on, a Dwayne Underwood or a Adbert Alzolay, Jen was saying, they're just not there yet. So they need to. Really, I'm hoping that by the time people listen to this, before we do our next podcast, that they've added another body.
Yeah, and the Cubs are hoping for that too, as again, they seem pretty solid 1-4, but that fifth spot, definitely a big question mark right now here in the early days of 2018. Kerry, question number two, of course, Chili Davis, after a couple years with the Red Sox, he's the new hitting coach for the Cubs heading into 2018. When Chili looks at his to-do list, so to speak, is the number one task or the number one challenge on that list getting Jason Hayward to be the Jason Hayward of old? Would you say that's a fair statement?
I don't think that's his number one task. I think that's one of many tasks that he has. One of the reasons that Joe Maddon was so high on getting Chili on the staff was because he remembered his conversations that he had with Chili Davis back when they were on the Angels together. And Chili was a player, and he really liked Davis's approach to the game. You know, his approach in certain situations, two strikes, you know, runners on base, that kind of thing. And I think that's something that the Cubs really feel they want to improve upon with their young players. Hayward's just another project, in essence, that Chile gets to do. The nice thing is that I guess the two of them have already started working together in Mesa at the Cubs complex. You'd like to think that Jason showed some improvements last year, and he did. The problem, I think, for him was that he missed so much of the year with a hand injury, and it just was hard for him to kind of get back and pick up where he left off.
Yeah, hopefully Chile has that magic potion to get Jason Hayward to be the guy that he was during his Braves days at the plate. His defense is without peer, as we all know, as we've discussed in multiple weeks, but the offense still with some work to do on that end. Kerry, as far as the back end of that bullpen, we've seen Aroldis Chapman come and go. We've seen Wade Davis come and go. He signed a multi-year free agent deal with the Rockies. So obviously the question here is, how do the Cubs address the closer situation?
Well, I think they feel that they've addressed that with the addition of Brandon Morrow. Morrow was with the Dodgers primarily as a setup pitcher. If the season started today, he would be their closer. And he did. He does have some minimal closing experience. I think he's also shown that he can. He's durable. And I think what they also liked, well, maybe they didn't like, was how dominating he was in the postseason against them last October. It wasn't pretty, but he was very effective.
Yeah, he definitely got overworked, as we saw by the time the World Series came around. But in the regular season, he was as good as they come, and to get him was a huge get for the Cubs for that restocked bullpen here in 2018. Kerry, interesting topic I want to get your take on. In some discussions with Theo Epstein, he's of the frame of mind that, a bona fide leadoff hitter, a guy that's defined as a leadoff hitter, is more of a luxury than a necessity. What's your take on his opinion of that, and who do you see being a leadoff guy? At least who do you see right now having an inside track on inheriting that role next year?
Well, Theo will defend that statement by pointing out also that the Cubs finished second in the National League in runs scored with 822, that they didn't need Dexter Fowler at the top of the order. I guess to me, knowing players as I do, they seem to like a routine. They seem to like, not a routine, but regularity. They seem to like to know, hey, I'm going to be at the top of the order, tomorrow and for the next day and the next day. Fowler, I know, really thrived in that spot. The Kyle Schwarber experiment did not work, and Madden was asked about it during the winter meetings. He said he wouldn't rule it out, but I have a feeling that's not the way they'll go. Maybe it's just easier for me and doing my lineups, to know that there's one guy that's going to be up there. But I don't think they've really settled on who it'll be, because I think part of that will be reflected because Joe likes to rotate players so much. It could be Ben Zobris one day. It could be Ian Happ the next day. It could be Albert Almora, another day. It might not be one guy. They rotated 11 people in that position last year.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting for me to see. I just know Joe likes to move guys around a lot and keep people fresh. It just seemed like in 2016 when Dexter was there that things went well.
Yeah, obviously things went well in 2016. And, I see both sides of the argument. Theo saying that, well, we did finish second in the league in runs scored. But on the other hand, as you pointed out, having been around players, that they're creatures of habit. They like the regularity. And so to shuffle guys constantly in and out of that position could really, mess with their psyche a little bit, not knowing from one day to the next, am I hitting first? Am I hitting eighth? I don't know. So that's going to be very interesting to see that tug of war that may go on during spring training and beyond, unless they get a guy that can really lock down that spot. Kyle Schwarber, Kerry, you brought up that experiment did not turn out so well. A very difficult 2017 for Kyle, coming off the major injury in 2016. But based on what you've seen from him, and of course we've seen the articles where he's a more svelte Kyle Schwarber, not quite as beefy as we're used to seeing him. He's had discussions with some front office guys and with Joe Madden just about what to expect for 2018. What do you expect from Kyle Schwarber going forward here?
Well, I'd expect 30 homers again and a bump up in the RBI. And I don't think that we'll see the struggles as much at the plate as he had, you know, at the start of last year. And again, I think we've talked about this before. I think the biggest problem last year is that the Cubs were expecting him to do a lot in 2017, kind of forgetting that he missed pretty much all of 2016, you know, except for two games, so and World Series. But it's kind of hard to have that happen. So, you know, really, 2017 was his second year in the big leagues. So let's cut him a little slack. I know Cubs fans don't like to do that, but cut him a little slack. And hopefully, you know, this is a guy who will come up. You know, you look at his September last year, he hit .288 in 21 games. I mean, I think Cubs fans will take that in a heartbeat. So let's see how that goes.
And, Carrie, you brought up something interesting. His 2016 season was so odd and so disjointed. Played just a couple games, got hurt, and then returns and helps the team win a World Series. And he not only returned to the World Series, he was so good that do you think that created something of an unrealistic expectation for what he could do for a healthy 2017 campaign? And do you think that weighed him down a little bit?
I don't think it weighed him down. I think it just created unhealthy expectations, which, of course, a lot of people tend to do. You know, you have to remember he prepped for that World Series by going to the cages and just focusing so intently on the pitch machines where they're
right.
You know, they're throwing balls at him. So he's working so hard and so intent on getting a feel for how the ball's coming at him that it was like boom, he went from that to the games, and all he had to focus on was hitting. He didn't have to worry about playing the field at all because he was only the DH. I mean, it was like a perfect setup. You know, I just think the expectations on him for 2017 were just a little out of whack.
Yeah, and having said all that, for everything he went through with getting demoted, with the struggles and you know, the expectations, the guy still hit 30 home runs. And, I mean, it's crazy to think of how talented he is. And if he can, you know, put 2017, the struggles behind him, and get back on track for 2018, I mean, if he hits 30 home runs in a down year, there's no telling what a healthy, focused, locked-in Kyle Schwarber could do in 2018. And I know Cubs fans are excited to find out. Carrie Muscat, great stuff as always. We'll do it again soon. We thank you for the time. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Chicago Cubs.